Welcome to the most listened to golf in the world, the Fairways of Life show, on air, online, and around the world, with the most candid interviews, unforgettable stories, taking you beyond the ropes. Here's your host, New York Times best-selling author, Matt Adams.
What is going on, folks? Welcome into the Fairways of Life show. Pleasure to have your company today. So, the interview we did with Mike Wann yesterday seems to be creating a lot of news. I'll put it that way. And primarily people are focusing on the comments that Mike made about live players and the U.S. Open. And the fact that, I'm paraphrasing obviously, that he was saying, yeah, you know, depending on where this thing ends up and where everything settles out, I could see a pathway for creating a pathway, as he put it, for live players. And so it's really, there's been a lot of people commenting on it, and it's interesting, as I think what it relates to is the world of golf trying to figure out how this all settles out and the difficulty in trying to figure that out when there is not, at least as yet, a definitive and clear path. We know that they're working on it, but, you know, we're told that they're working on it, but working on it doesn't mean that it's definitive. Working on it doesn't mean that it's going to come to fruition. It just means that there's people behind the scenes going, yeah, we're doing the best we can to try to see where this whole thing settles. So what do? Do you create contingency plans as a result? So coming up in just a couple of minutes today, I am super excited to tell you that our guest is going to be Peter Malnati. Now, we've known Peter, thankfully, for years and years and years on the show, and it's been fun to kind of watch him as a friend in terms of his development, both as a player and as a human being. I mean, he's 36 years old now. He's a dad of two boys, Hatcher and Dash. I bet Dash is really fast. When you guys were kids and you got a new pair of sneakers, did you think you could run really fast? You got him? But, oh, I bet you could run really fast in those. So he's a dad of Hunter and Dash. How has that changed him? And Hatcher and Dash. And Peter has chosen to take on a leadership role. And to have chosen to take on a leadership role amongst his peers at the same time as he still needs to go out and compete. Right? He's a professional athlete. He gets paid to play. And he's had some really good finishes, including a victory this year. His first since his inaugural victory in 2015. So there's much to the story of Peter Malnati, and he's playing, of course, this week. So we appreciate him taking the time on this Wednesday morning to spend some of that with all of us. And it's a pleasure to welcome multiple-time winner from the PGA Tour to the program, Peter Joseph Malnati. Peter, how you doing? How's everything going?
It's going great, Matty. How you doing, man?
Great. Are you home now, or where are you at? It looks, or an Airbnb, or what's the story for you?
Yep, Airbnb in Charlotte right now. Just got an afternoon pro-am time this morning, so just hanging out of the house. My family is back home in Knoxville because Hatcher is really into school at the moment, which is awesome. We want to, like, if he's excited about school, we don't want to take him away. So they're gonna, we are gonna take him away from Thursday and Friday though. They're traveling. You know, we live a little less than 4 hours from Charlotte, so they'll be driving over after Hatcher's school day today. So they'll be back with me this evening, which I'm super pumped about. And then we'll have an awesome week here in Charlotte.
Who is driving over? Is your wife Alicia driving over alone with them for 4 hours and two boys in the car seats? That seems like a pretty challenging 4 hours before.
Yeah, so we definitely decided when Dash was born that we weren't doing any more trips where it was just Alicia, the boys, and I, because that's just like when I'm out on the course for, you know, some of these days, especially if you consider like a weather delay or anything that can happen, that means Alicia is alone with both the boys for a long time, trying to just sort out life in a new city away from home. So we always either bring my mom, who is amazing, Or we did, we hired a nanny. So we bring one or the other. And this week it's my mom. She's coming over. And so she'll be either Alicia or my mom will be playing referee in the car while the other one's driving safely. So yeah, we got a good system going. It's working.
How fast is Dash?
when he was first born, I told I actually just played with him last week, 2 weeks ago in New Orleans, but I told Russell Knox, my good buddy on tour, I said, he's born, his name's Dash. And he looked at me real serious and said, what if he's slow? I said, then he's going to be a slow kid named Dash, and that's it. But I don't think we're going to have to worry about that because Hatcher looks like me. So our 4.5-year-old looks like me. Dash looks like his mom, which is good for him, but they both have my energy. So they're gonna pay me back for what I did to my mm-hmm. parents as a kid. It's already happening, I can tell, but they both have my energy, and Dash is full speed all the time. He's been up on 2 feet now for 2 or 3 months. And my walking pace, I can barely keep up with him. And, his legs are, 18 inches, 16 inches long. And I can't keep so he's going to be fast. I'm not worried about that.
That is awesome. So, dude, you are an anomaly in so many ways.
Sure.
When you think about the success you're having right now in 2024, in some ways you're a throwback, kind of a putt for dough. Because, and I know I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. When you look at your performance stats, right, off the tee, accuracy, et cetera, I mean, with all due respect, you're short and you're crooked. That usually is not a formula for success. But strokes game putting, yeah. Come on.
I used to be short. Now I'm long and crooked. I don't know if the stats back that up, because every time I look at my stats, they
don't
have me, below average driving distance. I hit it past everyone I play with now. Every time I play with someone, I hit it past them. Maybe not. I play with Jake Knapp in somewhere, and he hits it pretty far, I guess.
Driving distance, you're 134th on tour. So if the distance is new, it's probably not going to be reflected yet.
Well, I've been bombing it for a little while, but my problem is I hit three trees around that knock it backwards. I think that skews my average. I'm long and crooked. By long, I mean I'm long compared to where I was 10 years ago. I would say in terms of all the swing speed, ball speed stuff, I've got to be right on average on tour now, maybe a tick above. But I still don't hit it straight enough to take advantage of that. But the week I won a few 6 weeks ago now at the Valspar Championship, that's a tight little dog leggy golf course that actually
awesome
is not
course.
Overly short. It's an old school course that winds through trees, but it's decently long. I was fourth in the field in strokes gained off the tee that week. And
that's it. Preach that's it. I like that.
That's the reason I won the tournament, because I've always said this, if I can get my strokes gained off the tee to zero, so just neutral, I'll have a long, successful career, contending in tournaments on the PGA Tour, because I'm good enough everywhere else. You can't recover from losing, basically a shot around off the tee, the 4 shots a tournament off the tee, which is what I've done for the last 4 or 5 years.
What did you do then, Peter? How did you gain more space? How did you get more width in your swing so you could generate more speed? What changes did you make?
Honestly, it was never one thing. It was never this. I shouldn't say that. Maybe this, because I'm about to tell a story that means it was one thing in the beginning. I gained 6 or 7 miles an hour of ball speed in a day. And I still remembered it was the Monday of, it was the Sunday before the Players' Championship in 2016 or 17. I was still, banging drivers at 160 ball speed, very bottom 2% on tour for sure. And I was working with a coach at the time named Mitchell Spearman. Mitchell had me do this drill. He's like, dude, you never get to your right side. You're always on your left side the whole time. So you never have any power to transfer because it's always left. So he had me do this drill with my driver where he's like, I want you to, you know, it's a basic drill, you know, I just want you to take your backswing and your backswing. I literally want you at the top of your swing to have this moment where your left foot comes completely off the ground. And then, you know, as you transition, tap it back down and go. And, you know, there's the awkwardness of feeling something different for the first 10 swings. But by like the 15th swing doing that, I was 6 miles an hour faster that day.
Whoa.
Like that day. So that was the moment. But then from there, I've gone from, you know, 166 ball speed or so that day. And that was just on the range. It wasn't on course. So I wasn't like,
sure,
I gained those 6 miles an hour instantly, like to play with. But, you know, from that day, I had like the foundation from a swing perspective that I could generate more power. And then since then, you know, I've, it's a combination of a lot of things, you know, a combination of time in the gym, where, you know, you can see these muscles, right? Everybody like,
yeah, you're ripped.
Yeah, it's just fact. I mean, yeah, whatever. It is what it is. But it's a combination of like putting on some good golf strength, and then just a steady progression of like, I think improvements in my swing have helped me hit the ball more out of the middle of the club face, which is a nice thing. And then one thing that I think, you know, might be underestimated is the fact that, I mean, I'm steadily and progressively become more comfortable on tour, even if I'm not more, you know,
yes,
haven't been more successful in sound, but I'm more comfortable, I feel more secure. And I think it's just a maturity thing too, that I'm like, I'm less concerned over my shots than I used to be, because I know now that some of them are going to stink, some of them are going to be great. The weeks when you stink, you're going to miss the cut. The weeks when you're great, you need to be ready to take advantage of it. And so I swing with a little more freedom than I used to. And I think that is an underestimated source of speed, to just, you know that. Whereas, you know, before I still absolutely hate missing cuts. I hate playing poorly. You know, in my career, I've missed more cuts than I've made, which is, I find to be an annoying stat, because I hate every one of them. But I also know that a missed cut doesn't define anything about who I am or my life. And so I'm not like, I hate them, but I'm not scared of them. And that's a difference that from, you know, where I was 6-8 years ago, where I was like scared of a missed cut because I felt like it defined me. And so I think there's a little bit of freedom in there too, that comes from that's valuable for speed.
You know, where we're talking about this and talking about what you're working on to improve in your game and what have you, I was starting down the road too of giving you praise where you deserve. It's second in strokes gained putting, which is why I was saying it's kind of almost like a throwback putt for dough situation with you. That is a remarkable stat. And the fact that putting prowess is something that you've hung on to for many, many years, and it is a formidable weapon for you. Could you talk to us about that? And is putting for Peter Malnati also a window into the soul?
that seems maybe, I hope parenting's a window into the soul more than putting.
Me too.
I get a great kick out of this, and I don't know if this is ever true. Obviously I never met Ben Hogan. But I think a lot of people carry this sort of mindset that I heard that he said once that putting should only count half or something. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of people carry that mindset, because I always hear people say stuff to the effect of, I played amazing, I just didn't putt very well, or I played amazing, I just couldn't get a putt to go in. And my response to that is always, that's roughly half of the game. Like, it's roughly half of the game of golf. Like, if you figure on a good day on the PGA Tour, you're going to hit 60, you know, 60, on a great day, 64, on a good day, 69, on a bad day, 73 shots. And you figure roughly on an average day, 28, 29 of those are going to be putts. It doesn't make sense to me to ever say, oh man, I played great, but I putted badly. Like, putting is half of playing. Like, you could say I hit it great and I putted badly, but if you played great, that would have to include putting. And I've always sort of had that perspective of, you know, the 300 yard drive and the tap in you make after you miss the 4-footer both count as one shot toward your total. And so, you know, if you can avoid having to tap in after missing the first putt, that's a shot you get to take off your score. And, so that's always been, something that I, you know, I've known is a strength for me. Yes, if it was a window to the soul, I don't know. That seems a little, you know, overly poetic, but what I will say is, I think despite the fact that, you know, everyone who knows me knows that I'm very socially capable. Like I guess the more accurate way of saying that is I talk a lot. Everyone who knows me knows that, but you know, my actual, like the place that I go to like restore who I am is either like, you know, alone time with my family, which is not very restorative at the moment with a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, but alone time, quiet time by myself is like where I go to like restore my spirit, my soul. And I can have that on a putting green. Like I can have not so much on the PGA Tour usually because it's crowded, but when I'm home, I can go to a putting green with a putter and one ball. And for an hour or 90 minutes, I can be so present, so content. And that's been always something that I've really enjoyed. And so I think putting, you know, I think there is something, you know, there is something kind of poetic about that for me, that I've always enjoyed that peacefulness and the challenge of working on it, and the creativity and the feel and everything that goes into being a good putter has always been something that sort of resonates with me. So yeah, I've putting is a big part of my success. And
Peter, that's what's different about you guys that are great putters. That's what's different about you guys is that you guys that are great putters, by and large, you don't overcomplicate it. And somehow that part of the game that is, I mean, Gary Player himself told me you relive your sins over a 3-foot putt in a major championship, right? And so for the rest of the world that are dealing with all sorts of demons that choose to rear up from the ground when they're on a putting green, you guys somehow are floating on a cloud. And I always try to ask the question, I got to take a break here, so I'm not going to have you jump in just yet, my friend. I always ask the question, great putters, give me your philosophy on putting. And usually it's like, hey, it's my solitude. It's where I find myself. That's why I asked you if it was a window into the soul. And then I say, well, try to explain it. They go, you know, the best way to do it is just go out there, look at it, and hit the putt, get it to the hole. And I'm like, the vast majority, I think that's why I think putting somehow is a gift. We're going to be back with more with Peter Malnati right after this. We'll keep going down that gift. Andrew, go back to that shot that we have of Peter Malnati, because I love where he's sitting. The way that picture is framed behind him just shows us all of the rhythms coming right from his brain right now as we continue on this conversation. More of it with Peter Malnati after these words. The PGA Tour Superstore is the presenting sponsor of the Fairways of Life show. Number one golf retailer, coast to coast. Yeah, nearly 70 big, beautiful stores. You need it, swing it, wear it, learn from it. You'll find it inside of those walls where you are shopping with the best. Shop with the pros.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous Lynx courses and our world-famous Parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
Ben Hogan Golf Equipment is back. Established in 1953, we serve golfers who demand excellence of their equipment. Designed by the game's best engineers, forged in the world's best foundries, and built to order in the USA. Don't settle for off-the-rack disappointment. Elevate your game with custom clubs at direct consumer pricing. Exclusively at BenHoganGolf.com. That's BenHoganGolf.com.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team. The absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try this. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm going to go after PGA Tour.
Playing on the PGA Tour is not easy.
But you know what is easy?
Hitting the 524 series from Tour Edge.
Hitting linebackers and home runs used to be easy.
Out here, you're going to need all the easy you can get.
Introducing the 524 series from Tour Edge. The easiest clubs you'll ever hit. Even the best players in the world can use a little easy.
I like the sound of that. Look out, PGA Tour.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to BoyneGolf.com.
Welcome back to the Fairways of Life Show. Our guest is multiple-time winner on the PGA Tour, Peter Malnati. Do you like the sound of that, Peter, when you're introduced now as a guy? You've won on the PGA Tour, and that was a distinction of honor, no doubt. But to be a multiple-time winner on the PGA Tour, did you feel like it validated something in any way, either to the public or to yourself?
I mean, like, of course it, like, it's an amazing feeling to win on the PGA Tour. And it was, you know, the first time I won back in 2015, I really felt like it happened. I use this phrase, I happened by accident, which isn't a good, accurate description. But, like, I didn't start the week back in 2015 at the Sanderson Farms Championship thinking, this is my week, I can win this tournament. I'm going to go out and do my best, and I can win this tournament. Like, I was just like, I'm back. It's the second event, or maybe third event, of my second season on the PGA Tour. My first season on the PGA Tour hadn't really gone that well. And I was just saying, Let's try to build some positivity. Let's try to, you know, bank some points, and let's go. And you know, we had crazy weather. I think I had 27 holes to play still in the tournament by the end of the day on Sunday. And so I had, you know, I played 27 holes on a Monday morning, or not Monday morning, all day Monday. I played 27 holes at Country Club of Jackson and went on to win the tournament. And it just all, like, it was like, I mean, until I was maybe on the 12th hole of the final round, it still never occurred to me that I might win that tournament. Like, it really didn't. I was just really hopeful to bank some points and get off to a good start after having kind of a rocky rookie year, you know, my first time on tour 2 years before that. And so, you know, when it all came out and I you know, played such, you know, beautiful golf, those 27 holes on Monday, and I won the tournament, I was like, wow, like, that's really, really crazy. And then, you know, even though I haven't had, you know, any level of, like, consistent success since then, between then and now, I really, like, I've been doing, like the changes in the golf landscape, how much more competitive it has gotten, you know, the creation of this new signature series of events on the PGA Tour, all of that combined with kind of where I am in life now, as, you know, relative to the PGA Tour, an old guy. I feel super young, but relative to the PGA Tour, I'm an old guy. You know, my sons now, you know, I've seen the sacrifices my wife and family make to support the lifestyle that I love, you know, getting to play. Like, I really started to dig in and get pretty motivated, you know, in the fall last year. Like, I don't want to just, you know, scrape by and keep my PGA Tour card, like, which is a great accomplishment, like, a really great accomplishment to do. It's not easy, but I don't want that to be, like, what I'm content with. Like, I want my kids to see me work hard and be great. And so I made some changes this year. I went and saw a new coach, because, you know, as you pointed out very accurately, I have not driven the ball well enough to be successful on the PGA Tour in ever. And so went and saw a new coach the week of the LA Open. We've been working together now for, what is that, maybe two and a half, 3 months. Saw some immediate progress, really dug in and have worked really hard. And then, you know, when I teed it up at the Cognizant Classic, the old Honda Classic at PGA National, the Players Championship, and the Valspar Tournament, you know, those terms, like, I'm teeing it up in those thinking, like, I'm going to go out and, you know, my mindset's always the same. I'm going to go give my best effort on every shot. But if I do that well and my game comes together, I think I can win these weeks. And, you know, I played really well at PGA National. I was in great position through three rounds at the Players Championship. And then, you know, I obviously went into Sunday at the Valspar in the second to last group, two shots behind the leaders, and then played a really steady, beautiful round of golf and won the tournament. You asked if it's validating. Like, I think it's validating of the process that I've been through and the steps that I've taken to try to take my game to another level. Very validating of that. Is it validating in terms of, like, you know, what I project outward to, you know, people who are watching who, like, I don't know. And I've genuinely gotten to the point where I care, but I don't care what, like, I don't look at, you know, when I was early in my career, I looked at Twitter comments and it mattered to me that, you know, people liked that I won and care. Like, I don't look at it anymore. I don't care.
Is that the armor that you used? You got a sponsor's exemption into the AT&T Pebble Beach, and you, maybe you had yourself insulated enough that you didn't hear the clamoring of critics that were like, "Wow, a board member gets an exemption." Da da da. But you finished 14th that week, and I was thinking to myself, I wonder if he heard some of the chirping and was like, went out there and proved to him that you deserved it, that you can play very, very well. Was any of that the case, or did you just go out there and do your thing as you just described it and you finished 14th because you're good enough to finish 14th?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, you know, I don't need extra motivation by any means. I'm, you know, every PGA Tour event motivates me enough, but, you know, I did, I mean, I actually didn't hear the clattering until a reporter asked me about it on Tuesday of tournament week. And then that for me was so, like, it's so easy for me to respond to that kind of criticism because it's like, I felt so comfortable asking the tournament at Pebble Beach for a sponsored exemption because of the fact that I'll say it. I feel like that, the nine times prior to this year when I play that tournament, which is every year I've been on tour, you know, the amateur that I've been paired with has had a great experience playing with me. I totally embrace that format. It's amazing for me to play in the Pro-Am format because I actually have someone to root for, whereas, you know, in a normal PGA Tour event, you're out there and it's like, if you're having a bad day or a bad week, your week is shot. But, like, I've played that event before and played really poorly, but helped an amateur in my group have the time of his or her life. And that's something that I take a lot of pride in. And so I don't feel the least bit bad in asking for an exemption to that tournament, because that's what that tournament has always been about. And, you know, that's a role that I play well and a role that I enjoy. So it's just not that hard for me anymore. Like, I used to care so much because there's critics out there for everything all the time. Now, there are people out there that are chirping this week that Webb Simpson has a sponsored exemption into an event where he has done, like, he and his wife have created a school in Charlotte for families that need a school. Like, they have done so much in this community that, like, I don't care if he had never won a tournament on the PGA Tour, much less having won a Players Championship, a US Open, however many he has. He deserved a spot in this tournament for what he means to this community. And, you know, people are going to chirp, and that's just okay with me now. Like, I want to make sure. I got a great piece of advice from my mentor and really dear friend, Don Colleran. When the pandemic started and no one knew what to do, no one knew anything. You know, he was still in his role. He was the CEO of FedEx Express. And I was talking to him about, like, PGA Tour stuff. And he said to me, he said, "Peter, you have to understand that when things like this happen, you know, it's not the first time we've ever had an experience like this." He goes, "But the playbook goes out the window. There is no playbook. So you just have to make doing the right thing your North Star." And those are words that, like, have resonated so strongly with me. 'Cause I'm like, if you make doing the right thing your North Star, you can handle the criticism, you can handle what people say. And so that's sort of been something that I've tried to live by since he told me that.
So when we come back with Peter Malnati, I want to go down the road of some of the things that Peter is touching on. And part of that is the world we live in now, the society we live in now, that it isn't so much about listening to another person, learning from them, and maybe modifying or even changing your perspective. It's about digging yourself in on one side or the other. And whatever side you're on, the other person is wrong and vice versa. Is there a middle ground? Can there be voices of reason? Where does all this head? How does one get to a point where they have the maturity and the comfort in their own skin to sit back and tell us the things that Peter is telling us right now? We're talking about life things on top of golf things. And that's one of the reasons I love talking to Peter Malnati, which is a conversation that will continue right after this.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous Lynx courses and our world-famous Parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
Ben Hogan Golf Equipment is back. Established in 1953, we serve golfers who demand excellence of their equipment. Designed by the game's best engineers, forged in the world's best foundries, and built to order in the USA. Don't settle for off-the-rack disappointment. Elevate your game with custom clubs at direct-to-consumer pricing. Exclusively at BenHoganGolf.com. That's BenHoganGolf.com.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team. The absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try this. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm going to go after the PGA Tour.
Playing on the PGA Tour is not easy.
But you know what is easy?
Hitting the 524 series from Tour Edge.
Hitting linebackers and home runs used to be easy.
Out here, you're going to need all the easy you can get.
Introducing the 524 series from Tour Edge. The easiest clubs you'll ever hit. Even the best players in the world can use a little easy.
I like the sound of that. Look out, PGA Tour.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to BoyneGolf.com.
Stride by Zero Friction, the first of its kind personal cabin. Walk in comfort and style with Stride's remote and follow me technology. The Stride handles almost any terrain, and its 54-hole range will last all day. The lightweight design and removable front wheels makes it simple to handle. Plus, it easily fits golf carts. Order yours and save. Visit ZeroFriction.com/Stride or scan the QR code to order yours today. Stride, your personal caddy.
Our guest is Peter Malnati here in the Fairways of Life show today. Peter, are you getting recognized more, or when you take off the bucket hat, do people have difficulty, knowing that it's you?
Yeah, as long as I'm in street clothes, I can still go anywhere and do anything I want for now, which is, like, I've joked over the years with my Pro-Am partners and, like, the Wednesday Pro-Ams at tour events. I'm like, you know, I found this really, really sweet spot where for like 6, 7, 8 years in a row, I've kept my job on the PGA Tour, but I've not played well enough that anyone has ever heard of me. And so it's nice. Like it's actually nice. And like I said, I'm motivated now in this changing landscape. Like I really do. I want my kids to see me work hard and be great. So I am very motivated to do well, but it is super nice that, like, you know, even in my hometown, I mean, we'll occasionally see someone who knows who we are or something like, but we can go to Dos Bros, our little counter serve Mexican place that we like. Like we can go anywhere we want, and it, you know, it's no one bothers us, knows who I am, knows who we are. It's really great.
Have you had any skin problems in the past, skin cancer, what have you, as a professional player? Because obviously wearing a bucket hat like that is so important for so many of us. I have skin cancer, so I deal with the issues nonstop. Have you ever had anything like that? Was that part of the motivation?
My mom and my older sister have both. My sister had a melanoma caught incredibly early, just had to do, you know, a deep biopsy. And that was it. They didn't have to do any other treatment because they got it early enough and got it all. My mom had, I'm not actually familiar with the terminology, but she had like a squamous something that was like right on the tip of her nose. So she has a little divot out of her nose, which is just a constant reminder to me of why I wear the bucket hat, why I'm diligent with my sunscreen in the mornings. So the hat is very much a practical thing for me, yes.
And it also is a very, very, very important and safe message for so many people, because you're on that platform, you're on that stage, Peter.
Yeah.
I've asked you this question for well over a decade when we've had a chance to be together or talk. You, and even more so now as a multiple time winner and recent winner, it's even more acute. You are also your own brand. You've spoken multiple times already today that part of your motivation is to make your boys proud of you, to understand who you are and what you do. But you are still the Peter Malnati brand as a professional athlete. What do you want that brand to represent to the world?
Man, this is why I love talking to you, Matt, because you're good, and you ask real questions. And I have a conversation with my son a lot. So Hatcher's 4 and a half. I've probably been talking to him about this for about a year already now. So I started talking to him when he was 3 and a half, because you know he, like adults, like teenagers, like me, like all of us, you know, he does things that are just to get attention. You know, he's been doing that since he was 2, but I'm 37 and I still do that. Do things just to get attention. So this is a conversation that I've tried to have with him a lot that I want to embody in my own life, because it's something that, you know, even at, like I said, even as an adult who's been on this earth for 37 years, I forget this. So I talked to him a lot about this idea of contentment and how I think in life a lot of us would all say, you know, say like, what's the secret to life? What's the goal of life? What are you after in life? And we all say, just, you know, happiness. I want, you know, happiness for my family, happiness for people I care about, happiness for myself. But that's, I think that misses the mark, because happiness is always fleeting. Like there's situations in life where you're not supposed to be happy. Like, you know, on a small scale, you know, your kid gets a tummy bug. That's a miserable experience for everyone involved. You know, most of all the kid, but like miserable experience, you're not supposed to be happy. You know, bigger scale, like stupid stuff happens. Like kids that are innocent and have done everything right, get cancer and go through chemo and miserable treatments and sometimes have bad outcomes. And it's like the absolute worst, like no way you're supposed to be happy. So when we think happiness is what we're striving for, that's wrong. What we're after is contentment. And you can be absolutely miserable, but still feel content. Like contentment means that you did your best, that you gave what you wanted to give to the situation, that you are proud of who you are at the end of the day. You're proud of who you are and what you've done. And so I talked to my son about that, and like, does he understand what I'm saying yet? No, of course not. But I'm having that conversation for me as much as I'm having it for him. Because it's just something that I need a reminder of all the time, is that we're not in this because we know if we do what's right, we'll always get the outcome that we want. We're in this because we should always do what's right. Um, and And so this like striving for contentment is really, I think it's, you know, in a world where there are eyeballs on me, you know, not many, by the way, I'm very aware of that, that still the majority, you know, probably the majority of golf fans don't even know who I am, much less like, you know, the greater public. But when there are eyeballs on me, that is like, that's the brand, that's the image that I want to project, is like, you know, a guy who finds contentment in doing the right things, in doing my best, in contributing what I can in every situation. And that's something that, like, you know, like I said, doesn't mean happiness. It doesn't mean you get the outcome you want every time, but it does mean when you put your head on your pillow at night, you can feel good about who you are. And that's just something that you can't put a price on that.
You chose a leadership position on the tour, and you happen to have chosen it at a time that's probably the most turbulent in the history of the men's professional game. The only time I can go back to that would even closely compare would be the late 1960s, when the PGA Tour essentially was formed out of the players' division from the PGA of America, and that split took place. So my first question to you is why? Why did you assume this role, and has it been what you expected of it?
I'll answer in reverse order there. It has not been what I expected of it from a time commitment. I you know, the timetable of becoming a player director on the PGA Tour's board is kind of drawn out. You serve a year in a role that is mostly, it might be a little like preparatory, but it's mostly just a name. They call you, so you get elected and they call you the chairman of the PAC, of our player advisory committee. So I was elected to be the chairman of the PAC in January of 22, which means I was asking people to vote for me late summer and fall of 2021. But I didn't actually take a seat on the board until January 1 of 2023. So I was asking people to vote for me and sort of campaigning, if you will, you know, late 21 for a seat that I took starting in 2023. So I didn't have the foresight to really see where this was all going. But what I did have was this really, really powerful understanding of the fact that good governance should involve broad perspectives. And, you know, it was just important to me that someone who was curious and open-minded, and had the perspective of you know, being kind of a grinder, strive to keep your card, sort of hang on the bottom end of the PGA Tour, was at least in the meetings to be there. So that was why I ran for that seat. I did not have any idea that we were going to be involved in like geopolitics and, you know, essentially an existential fight for the future of professional golf. Didn't know that's what I was getting myself into. You know, having, you know, the timing of things, you know, having this all coincide with the birth of my second child and having, you know, two boys that are young and full of energy, like, and also a career that is really, really difficult, you know, where I've spent, you know, 7 of my 10 years on the PGA Tour as very much a fringe player scraping to keep my card. That was part of the reason I ran to be on the board, because I thought it was important to have that perspective. But now that I'm on the board and the time commitment that it brings, it definitely, you know, if I had it all to do over again, knowing everything I know now, I would still do it the same way. I would ask for votes, I would campaign, I would try to be on the board. But man, it doesn't mean it's been easy. It's been really, really hard and challenging, but also very meaningful and impactful. So, you know, that's a long-winded way to say it hasn't been what I expected, but the reasons I wanted to be on the board have proven to be really important for me, and it makes it really meaningful that I'm there.
It's also impactful. It's also meaningful when a member of the board describes what you're engaged in as an existential fight for the future of professional golf. Is it that? Are we at an edge here of a risk of some way? And if so, what is that risk?
Yeah, no, I don't think there's risk of like professional golf at the highest level, like, you know, going away. That's not really it. It's just a matter of, you know, what will professional golf continue to look like? Like, what will the landscape be like? This model that we have on the PGA Tour that has been so, I'll use the word impactful again in a different sense here. It's been so impactful on the communities where we play. You know, because the tour, like when Dean Beaman was like, you know, building the modern business of the PGA Tour, with like, you know, he wrote into the fabric of it that it is, you know, at its core, an organization to benefit local communities, charities. You know, that model still like resonates really strongly with our core fan base, I feel like. And you know, that's just something like as we go down this path, and you know, right now we're in this little bubble where the value of professional golf has been incredibly inflated, mostly artificially. But you know, but also there is tremendous value, and like we have star power on the PGA Tour right now that is just like through the roof. Like the talent level on the PGA Tour, the pipeline to feed the PGA Tour. Like look at Ludwig and what he has done. Like there are, and I don't want to say this as if they're all the same, because they're not. But there's a pipeline of Ludwigs that are coming to the PGA Tour. Like there's no real in my mind, you know, I used the word, I did say existential threat to the, or existential
fight.
You know, I said it as if there's an existential threat to the future of professional golf. It's not that there's a threat. It's just, you know, how do we maintain a model that we all feel proud of, that benefits the players, the communities, you know, most importantly, the fans who make us, you know, give us the platform to have an opportunity. There's like, trying to get all those pieces right in a time right now where the value of a professional golfer is probably, you know, in some ways, like the on-course value has inflated to an unrealistic level. Like, how do we continue to just build this and feed and serve all the constituents, from the players to the fans to the local communities to the organizations that host these events? Like how do we do that all, figure all that out? That's the part that just is going to be, I think, you know, we're grappling with a lot of it right now. And we're in the middle of it, and we don't necessarily have a clear path forward in terms of what the model looks like. Like, you know, are we partnering with the PIF? Are we not partnering with the PIF? Like, we don't have clarity around that yet. And I don't think there's like a risk of us losing, you know, there's not a risk of us losing men's professional golf as something that is, you know, incredibly entertaining for fans around the world, and incredibly, you know, powerful to do good. I just want to make sure we keep that as part of the PGA Tour's mission, and keep the PGA Tour as the premier ultimate place for, you know, professional golfers to ply their trade.
Less than a minute left here, Peter, before I have to take a break. But can an argument been made that signature events, increased purses, et cetera, hasn't you as a PGA Tour player and others benefited from the existence of LIV?
No question right now. The question is, have we done this in a way that is sustainable, and can we continue to give the players, the product of the PGA Tour, the stars of the PGA Tour, I point to myself, meaning the stars, like the other players like me who are better than me, can we continue to give them what they want and feel they deserve, while also carrying on the brand of the PGA Tour in a way that is positively impacting, you know, all the constituents around us.
All right, when we come back with Peter Malnati, our final segment today, I do want to ask him about who he has aligned himself with, because it's our way of saying thank you to professional golfers for joining us, to say who are your sponsors, why you associated with them. Back with more of the Fairways of Life show after this.
I got ball fit in 2000, went on a little run. Then Bridgestone fit me again. and I went on another run. I just got fit again for the new Tour BX. The ball fitting's been helping me. Will it help you?
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
I think when you're training for other sports or why most people go to the gym is so that they can like have muscles and, you know, be strong and be healthy. And a lot of the reason why they struggle to play golf is their body doesn't move properly for them to be able to hit a golf ball. And when you're training for golf, it's a little bit different because you're focused more on flexibility and mobility and being strong in motion. When you're able to kind of have a warm up and have a workout routine and kind of gradually build up to where you're training your body to move properly, yeah, you're going to get a lot of big dividends on the golf course.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
What if we started a company and the company was under no time constraints, no financial constraints? The one constraint is their clubs had to be exceptional performers and much better than any other alternative. I was told time and again, it'll never work. It worked like a house of fire. And I'll tell you what, I think our customers love it. BXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Stride by Zero Friction, the first of its kind personal caddy. Walk in comfort and style with Stride's remote and follow me technology. The Stride handles almost any terrain, and its 54-hole range will last all day. The lightweight design and removable front wheels makes it simple to handle. Plus, it easily fits golf carts. Pick up your Stride today at a local PGA Tour superstore near you or at zerofriction.com/Stride. Stride, your personal caddy.
As we welcome you back to the Fairways of Life show, Peter Malnati has been our guest in today's show. It's been amazing. His insights are incredible. That's the reason why we had him on the show, so that you guys could get to know, hopefully, the Peter Malnati that we have always known, a deep, deep thinker, a person who truly cares. Peter, you have aligned yourself with companies, and I know that when you do it, it's not simply about the money. It's part of what you do as a professional athlete, but it's also about aligning with your own personal philosophies. Who are you sponsored by? Who do you represent?
Yeah, so I mean, you can see a couple of them right here on my shirt, which is great. These have been core sponsors for me since, honestly, I was, when I was a senior in college, playing pretty well. I got reached, a representative from Titleist reached out to me. And since then, you know, they've been incredibly loyal to me. So I've played, I may have used a different three wood for maybe two events my rookie year. And with the exception of that, I've played 14 Titleist clubs every event I've ever played on tour. FootJoy, also under the Acushnet umbrella. They've been incredibly awesome to me and my whole family. So I think, from head to toe, they make the most comfortable, best golf gear. So I've been lucky to do that. I have a little sleeve logo here that's, wrong sleeve. The sleeve logo here that's Ewing Outdoor Supply. It's it started as an irrigation company, but now it's total landscape, hardscape company. They are really impactful in the golf space now, but they also do residential. And the reason I aligned with Ewing, their CEO is a guy named Doug York, but it's a family business. Doug married, I think, into the Ewing family, if I remember this right. But it's a family business that's been passed down just through generations of the Ewing family. And I get to do a cool little tent visit with them when I'm in Scottsdale, because that's where their headquarters is. And it's just an amazing company. And so that's great. And then, you know, on, I'm really lucky, on the belly of my bag, I have a club back home in Knoxville. I've always had a course called Holston Hills on the belly of my bag, because Holston Hills, when I was first getting started, gave me privileges for free. It's an amazing club. And I now have a course on my bag called Fox Den, Fox Den Country Club in Knoxville. They've given my family a membership. They treat us like gold. My little boy can come out and, you know, he can hit 30 balls in 4 minutes on the range because he just goes rapid fire. Hatcher does. And so that's really great. And, I was telling Dom this, your producer, my splurge purchase after the win, I'm not into cars. I'm not into stuff in general. I don't need a lot of stuff. But I want things that make my life better for my family. And so my splurge purchase, I bought a jet card with a company called Fly Alliance. And so on weeks when my family travels with me and we can't get a direct flight on a commercial airline, we'll be able to use Fly Alliance to fly us. And that's something that'll be really important for my family and I. And so, yeah, it's great. And I've had a lot of good sponsors over the years that have helped me too a ton that aren't with me anymore. But like Kind Snacks was great to me. And Lou Malnati's Pizza in Chicago, which was so organic, was so cool. So really, really, really thankful for all that, all the support I've gotten.
It's awesome, Peter. We are out of time, but we appreciate the time that you have given us. I love what you represent. Love who you are, my friend. We wish you the very, very best, as you know, always. And to all of you, thank you so much for joining us today. Until we're together again, goodbye for now.